we kind of reconvince so that we can proceed with other presentations. And in the meantime, let me just verify, is the Corruption Watch? Oh, great, yeah, because we were supposed to have a presentation by Office of the Premier, Western Cape. I think they're still not here, and we're not sure whether they will arrive. We will actually proceed with the Corruption Watch, because they've been here and they're ready to deal with the presentation. Just give you an indication if you're ready to proceed. Okay. Now we have Nicola Whittaker, who will be doing the presentation.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Minister. I'm going to structure our presentation this morning, which is from Corruption Watch, into the following sections. A brief introduction to Corruption Watch and what we do. Two broad comments on changes to the initial draft of the bill that Corruption Watch calls for these two provisions to be reintroduced, and finally support for existing strong provision in the statute before Parliament today. So just briefly to tell you about us, we are a civil society non-profit organization. We do not have any political or business alignment, and we promote transparency and expose corruption, particularly as regards public money. We believe that confronting corruption requires an active and engaged citizenry that is prepared to hold leaders to account, and we aim to ensure that custodians of public resources, including public officials, act responsibly to advance the interests of the public. It is on this basis, Corruption Watch's mandate, that our activities include monitoring and responding to legislative developments which impact on public goods and services and the custodians thereof. Given the importance of the Public Administration Management Bill in setting standards and introducing systems for improved public administration, Corruption Watch welcomes and thanks the committee for this opportunity to respond to this important piece of legislation. So I'd like to begin then with two comments based on an earlier draft of the Public Administration Management Bill. In the previous draft of the bill, there were two provisions that Corruption Watch particularly welcomed, and is disappointed that these two provisions no longer find expression in the bill before Parliament today, and I'm going to briefly set out why and champion for their reintroduction into this piece of legislation. The first is a provision regarding a cooling off period when a public official moves from the public sector to the private sector. This particular clause was in Section 38 of the previous draft of Public Administration Management Bill. What it did was introduce a cooling off period, as I said, before a public official could move from a government job into the private sector. This particular clause was novel in our law. Corruption Watch endorsed this provision, and Corruption Watch viewed it as striking the correct balance between preventing corruption on the one hand and allowing for freedom of choice of profession on the other hand. On introduction of this particular section contained in the previous draft of the PAM Bill, an employee who was involved in contract award could not take up work with a service provider, that is a private company, within 12 months of being involved in the award of the contract to the private entity. The clause also prohibited appointment by a former state employee to the board of the service provider company. This is in cases where the state employee had been directly involved in awarding the contract to the private entity. The relevant authority under the previous version of the statute was empowered to approve a shorter period than 12 months in accordance with the prescribed criteria that were set out. The section provided in particular that a service provider could not within 12 months employ an employee or appoint an employee to the board of service provider or engage that employee for payment or money or any gratification if three things were present. Number one, the employee had set criteria for the award of the work. Number two, the employee had evaluated or adjudicated the bid. Or number three, had recommended or approved the awarding of the contract. Then on contravention of this provision, the contract of the service provider could actually be cancelled and in addition, the particular employee in question could face a fine. It is due to the three specific criteria that the employee has to be directly involved in the awarding of the contract that Corruption Watch view this provision as not impermissibly intruding on the rights contained in our Constitution to choose your profession. We thus view this provision as striking the correct balance in light of Section 217 of our Constitution, which requires that public procurement must be done in a way that is fair, equitable, transparent, cost-effective, and competitive. This phenomenon of moving from the public sector into the private sector has colloquially been referred to as a revolving door syndrome, and in Corruption Watch's view, it can be problematic for many reasons, including undermining the integrity of the state. Public officials are required to take decisions that benefit the public good without taking into account any possible personal gain, for example, the prospect of a future lucrative employment opportunity in a particular private company that is bidding for the contract. As I said, public officials are also required, in terms of Section 217 of our Constitution, to make decisions in a manner that is fair, including a manner that is impartial and that does not favor a particular interest. In other jurisdictions, key reasons have been advanced for the enactment of these so-called revolving door laws. Firstly, it has been said that these laws are necessary to protect the government from the use against it of proprietary information by former employees who leave government and then take up employment in the private sector. Secondly, the laws are necessary in order to limit the potential influence and lure of a lucrative private arrangement in the private sector, or the prospect of such arrangement may have. And thirdly, these laws are particularly necessary, and this is vitally important in Corruption Watch's view, not only to prevent corruption, but also to prevent the appearance of corruption in government processes. At the time the initial bill was introduced, Corruption Watch lauded the Department of Public Service and Administration for introducing these revolving door provisions. We are mindful of the balance that needs to be struck between eradicating conflicts of interest on the one hand and also unduly curtailing career movement on the other. We believe that the 12-month period that was proposed in the previous version of the PAM bill was a reasonable approach and struck the correct balance. We called upon the DCSA at the time to ensure that appropriate systems were put in place in order to monitor the enforcement of this provision in order to ensure that it achieved its designed purpose. In this regard, we aligned ourselves, and still do, with proposals by the Public Service Commission that suggest that clauses should be included in contracts between service providers and the state that prohibit service providers from recruiting public officials who they have encountered directly in the service provider government context in government, thus shifting part of the compliance burden onto the private sector. In sum, Corruption Watch is disappointed that the cooling off period has been excised from the PAM bill as before Parliament today, and we hereby call for its reintroduction, and we believe this is constitutionally permissible. That's our first clause we'd like to be reintroduced. Secondly, an anti-corruption bureau was created by the provisions of the previous PAM bill. This anti-corruption bureau no longer finds expression in the statute before Parliament today. At the time, Corruption Watch lauded this move on the part of the Department of Public Service and Administration and viewed the anti-corruption bureau as necessary and novel in our law. We admitted that some greater clarity was required as regards the establishment of this bureau, but maintain that it is possible and constitutionally permissible to create an anti-corruption bureau. Corruption Watch submits that the bureau would go a long way to addressing the Constitutional Court's unequivocal and unanimous ruling that government is constitutionally required to establish effective mechanisms to tackle corruption. In addition, Corruption Watch submits that there is a positive duty on the state to take measures to combat corruption. The proposed establishment of an anti-corruption bureau was thus a laudable part of government's efforts to establish effective mechanisms to do so. Corruption Watch notes that in the PAM bill that is before Parliament, there is a public administration, ethics, integrity, and disciplinary technical assistance unit. Corruption Watch, however, views the powers of this unit as watered down in comparison to those powers that were previously conferred upon the Anti-Corruption Bureau. Corruption Watch thus views this unit as not being as effective as the Anti-Corruption Bureau, which was in the previous version of the statute, could have been in tackling corruption-related misconduct in the public service. It is based on this that Corruption Watch calls for the Anti-Corruption Bureau to be reintroduced into statute. At the time when the Anti-Corruption Bureau was part of the statute, there was debate around as to whether it was constitutionally permissible for this bureau to operate in a manner that was set out in the statute, and as Corruption Watch proposed, even go further than what was contemplated in that statute. The bureau had the power to investigate and initiate proceedings in respect to corruption-related misconduct, and could do so in local and provincial government. This, at the time and how it was captured in the previous draft, had to be done with a concurrence of the relevant municipal council or premier. There was some debate around whether this was encroaching on the power of provincial and local government. Corruption Watch submitted at the time that this bureau was constitutionally permissible and that there was, in fact, no encroachment. What is key is that the unit that is created in the legislation that is before Parliament today does not have investigatory powers. These investigatory powers were conferred upon the Anti-Corruption Bureau, and Corruption Watch views these powers as being essential. In the latest Public Service Commission data, what we see is that there are a number of lengthy suspensions in the public service, demonstrating the ability at present to carry out investigations in an efficient and fast manner. The Anti-Corruption Bureau, Corruption Watch viewed as plugging this gap and assisting in these investigations. The unit, as it presently passed under the bill before Parliament today, has no such investigatory powers. In Corruption Watch's view, the Bureau, as it was cast in previous piece of legislation, could not conduct disciplinary proceedings and investigations of corruption-related misconduct without having regard to the views of relevant local government and provincial government authorities. That would, of course, constitute an impermissible intrusion on the autonomy of these two arms of government. But this was not the case. The requirement of having concurrence, which Corruption Watch actually submitted at the time, was not necessary, but given now that this bureau has been excised completely, we take a view that it needs to be reconsidered and that it is possible to overcome this possible conflict if the department still believes that it exists in terms of encroaching on local and provincial government. But in sum, as regards the Anti-Corruption Bureau, Corruption Watch again says the government is constitutionally required to establish effective anti-corruption mechanisms. The Anti-Corruption Bureau was a laudable attempt on its efforts to do so. The PAM bill should contain provisions establishing an Anti-Corruption Bureau. The excise of these provisions and creating rather a technical assistance unit with fewer powers and no investigatory powers, Corruption Watch submits, was not necessary. We thus submit the reintroduction of this bureau. Those are the two main provisions that Corruption Watch submits should be reintroduced. Cooling all spirits for public officials who move from the public sector into the private sector, and the reintroduction of the Anti-Corruption Bureau. And we submit that both of these two things are constitutionally permissible, balancing the rights in the Constitution. I'd like now to express Corruption Watch's support for the clause that exists in the statute before Parliament today, which is prohibition on public officials conducting business with the state. This section introduces an outright ban on public officials for conducting business with the state. It is novel in our law. Corruption Watch endorses this new provision. Corruption Watch, in addition, highlights the importance of increased capacity, including increased technological capacity, in enforcing this provision. Section 8 of the PAN bill before Parliament provides that an employee may not conduct business with the state or be a director of a public or private entity conducting business with the state. This outright ban on public officials doing business with the state does not exist, as I've said, in our current legal framework, and is thus an extremely positive step. We laud the DPSA's proposal to introduce this blanket ban, and we view it as sending a strong signal about enriching oneself through exposure to the state in the employment context. We support the proposed ban in light of, amongst other things, the constitutional guarantee to fair and competitive public procurement. In particular, Section 217 of our Constitution requires that when an organ of state contracts for goods and services, it must do so in a manner that's fair, equitable, transparent, cost-effective, and competitive. In order to give effect to this system, it is at very least necessary to require disclosure of financial interests, which are incorporated in the PAN bill, and in Corruption Watch's view, completely supportable to impose restrictions on public officials' ability to contract with the state. Corruption Watch submits that this proposed outright ban is constitutionally supportable in light of the rights contained in the Bill of Rights to choose one's trade, occupation, and profession. This right was watered down from the interim constitution to the final constitution. In the interim constitution, it was an economic freedom right, and we thus view the current ban as completely constitutionally permissible. Since Corruption Watch's inception in January 2012, we have received a number of reports from members of the public alleging corruption. One of the greatest category of reports that we have received to date are reports of alleged corruption in public procurement. Corrupt activities take place on both the part of the public officials and the private sector, of course, but we believe this ban will go a long way to curbing the corruption that we're seeing every day in the receipt of reports. As I've said, in addition to our overall support for this provision, we call for increased institutional capacity in order to ensure that this ban is monitored and implemented effectively. Thus, in sum, Corruption Watch expresses its general support to the Department of Public Service and Administration for its move to provide for the better organization, management, functioning, as well as personnel-related matters in public administration in all three spheres of government. Corruption Watch, in particular, welcomes the ban on public officials doing business with the state. We highlight the need for increased capacity and increased resources to monitor this new provision. We are, however, concerned and disappointed that two key provisions that found expression in the initial draft of the PAN bill have now been excised. As I've said, we view the introduction of a cooling-off period before public officials can enter the private sector as necessary and appropriate. We hereby call for its reintroduction into the new PAN bill. Corruption Watch 2 views the establishment of an anti-corruption bureau as necessary in the fight against corruption. We call for the rethinking of the provisions that we create this bureau. We are alive to the fact that there were issues that have to be resolved around this bureau, but we call for a rethinking of the bureau and thereafter a reintroduction of the anti-corruption bureau into the PAN bill. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Honorable Detroit, Williams, Murray, and Yakim in that order. Honorable Detroit. There was peace before you arrived, honorable Detroit.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your contribution. I just want to know. You were referring to the Anti-Corruption Bureau, and then concurrence that has to be gotten from the Council or the province involved. Now, if the point is that often collusion is happening between the council or the politicians on provincial level with the officials. There's collusion between civil oversight and the officials that is almost impossible to stop. Okay? So if we would assume that civil oversight is representatives are colluding or they're involved in this corruption, how would we then solve the problem if we need concurrence from the very same people that we cast a doubt over? That's the point. The other thing I find is that nowhere in the legislation we are referring to how audit committees and those institutions will fit into this. Because we have now provincial audit committees, we've got council level. That kind of oversight that sometimes maybe if they would be more effective, we would have stopped a lot of these problems, but they are not. That's my experience. Okay, so that's the first question around that one. Another one is just something that maybe you're not concerned with, but if we say, for instance, would subcontract people for 1 year from a nice place to a not so nice place, or sitting with all the lights and everything to a town without lights, if that would impact on this person's personal life or professional life, how would that build capacity? Thank you.
Honourable William.
Thanks, Chairperson. I've just got a question about the Anti-Corruption Bureau in relation to the unit that's before us in the legislation. I'd like to know the only problem that you have with the unit is got to do with its ability to investigate. Is that the only difference that you have a problem with? Thank you.
Honourable Mara.
Thank you very much, Jane. Just also a question on the Anti-Corruption Bureau. I'd just like to hear your opinion. You're very strong that that this will be the only bureau, basically, that can do the job. Are you saying that other existing anti-corruption bodies or institutions cannot do this effectively? Curving this corruption or dealing with this corruption cases? If you could just elaborate on that. When you mentioned about the that you're glad that employees are prevented from conducting business, you haven't mentioned anything about shareholding. I mean, if you're a shareholder, you don't have to be a director, you don't have to be an employee, but you still have a direct influence. And also family members of employees, have you looked at that, or is that not really a matter of concern? For Corruption Watch. Thank you very much.
Honorable Nyakem.
Thank you, Jefferson. Just on the same issue of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, that's Section 15 of the bill, Chapter 6, that deals with the unit. And if you look at Subsection 5, which in my view, from where I'm sitting, is like addressing the concern that you have, because any identification of a corrupt activity, and then now having the South African Police Services, which in terms of their existence have to deal with that. So don't you think that it might be a duplication of the responsibilities, right? You have the security guard in the brain that is that if you also have and also take into account the work that is done by the Public Service Commission in terms of how those issues of corruption are being dealt with. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay,
do you
have the responses? Thank you very much. To respond to the initial question, when Corruption Watch first made its comments
on the Public Administration Management Bill in July, I think it was, of last year. We proposed a change in wording as regards the need to get concurrence when taking a decision to initiate an investigation and disciplinary proceedings. We now have had to adjust our demands because the Anti-Corruption Bureau finds no place in the bill. And so if you read our detailed submissions, you'll see that we actually believe that it's constitutionally permissible to take a decision after consultation with, as opposed to in consultation with. And we set out in quite some detail why we believe after consultation with is sufficient as opposed to a more onerous in consultation with. Because the Anti-Corruption Bureau no longer finds expression in the bill at all, today we call for its reintroduction. Once it has been reintroduced, which we hope it will be, we will then flesh out our views as regards the need to consult with in taking a decision to initiate proceedings. The point about audit committee I think is a good one, and that is why overall we think there needs to be a rethinking of the provisions that create this bureau, taking into account other key structures such as audit committees. As regards whether, to stay on the bureau question, as regards whether the only problem we see with the bureau is the lack of its investigative powers, no, that is not the only issue, but it's a key issue that we wanted to highlight here today. Again, we put forward quite detailed submissions on the bureau, which can be accessed on our website. But just and carrying on from what was presented by the Open Democracy Advice Center, in the provisions that created the bureau, there was key protection there of whistleblowers, and the section that creates the unit in the current bill is silent on whistleblower protection, which is just one example of another failing in Corruption Watch's view of the unit. To address the question about is it only the Bureau that can do the job, no, absolutely not. We believe that a multi-pronged approach to fight the corruption is necessary in South Africa, and there are other institutions. We presented on the Bureau because it found expression in the June draft of the PAN bill, and we were excited about that, and now it no longer does. But we don't believe that it's a be-all and end-all of fighting corruption. As regards stakeholders, shareholders and possible influence that could be yielded in that regard, my understanding is that the panel does have clauses about disclosure, which, if I'm not mistaken, cover some of that, although I could be mistaken there. In terms of extending the ban to family members, Corruption Watch did think carefully about this, and it's our view that we need to balance the right to choose one's profession, which is contained in the Constitution, with other rights in the Constitution, such as Section 217. And we thus believe, as regards contracting with the state, we need to confine it to the specific state employee and use disclosure mechanisms as regards family members in order to balance those two rights. In terms of the subsection 5 of the current bill and whether this doesn't cater for our concerns, this subsection is not completely clear to us, and I think it may go some way to addressing some of our concerns. But it appears to us again that the investigatory aspect is missing from this unit. And it's our reading of the Public Service Commission data that's where there is a possible gap, given the huge number of public officials that remain on lengthy suspensions and the huge amount of time that investigations are taking place. So it is our view that this subsection doesn't quite fill this gap in that it speaks only to disciplinary proceedings as regards the unit and not the power to actually investigate. I don't think I'm in a position to respond to your question regarding secondment at this point.
Okay. I don't remember any other issue that you want to raise on this matter.
Yes, I find Chairperson and Mercy Corruption Watch have been very steadfast in the support of our stand on corruption, and we appreciate that. If we've let them down in any way, it's the nature of how laws are put together. And there's got to be extensive consultation. We've had extensive consultation, and what we have, what we're putting before you now, is what has been agreed to by all. Not all is lost. Democracy is an institution that is built upon brick by brick. We will still cover the ground that you're concerned about, but what we have right now, we are comfortable with, and thank you for your support. Honourable Mara, are you fine? We are covered.
Okay. Honourable members, I would like to thank Mrs. Nicola Mitaker for showing interest in this hearing and also coming and then sharing with us the issue that she raised in her presentation. Thanks to Corruption Watch as well. Thank you so much. We appreciate your presence. And okay, thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Minister.
Okay, Honourable Members, if we look at the presentation that was supposed to happen, we are unable to get any confirmation from the Department of the Premier. That's how it's called, the Premier Office in Western Cape. We were supposed to have Brian Hall doing the presentation. Fedusa did not necessarily want to come and do a presentation. They show interest in terms of just putting up their submission. We just want to check if the Center for Constitutional Rights is present here. If not, this really means that we have actually finalized our public hearing. We got presentations, we got verbal submissions. We had interrogations wherever we wanted to deal with that. And possibly if it can be briefed that the members get, then they get their lunch and we are back at 2 o'clock for the committee meeting, for the next part of the committee meeting that proceeds. In terms of the hearing, this was the last part of our hearing. And thank you very much for are those two hands, Honourable Williams, both by Honourable Nkembe and Honourable Maluleke, in that order.
Chairperson, thank you. I just want to get some clarity on the sense of constitutional rights. Surely if they scheduled their time for 13:45, they might be flying here. So will they be given the opportunity to speak on time? Because they might not be here because they're told not to be here.
Okay. No. We have verified with them. We just spoken with them, and they are not going to be here at all. Yes. So they're fine with what they've just presented, and they want to limit it to that, which gives a break of an hour.
Okay.
If lunch is ready, the members can proceed for lunch so that we can proceed with a committee meeting as well. We were finished with hearing. We can proceed with a committee meeting that will start at 14 hours exactly on the dot. Yes, in the same venue. Yeah. Thank you very much, Honourable Members and Minister, for the hard work. Break.